Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my good friend Lockwood Phillips to discuss world affairs. This week we are talking mainly about Trump's speech at the UN, and there are fireworks to come. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This afternoon, we're joined by Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, program heard every Wednesday afternoon here on the Talk Station. I'm looking forward to this conversation this afternoon. We're going to be spending a fair amount of time, just as a opening note, on the president's speech to the UN. And I'm looking forward to hearing Tom's observations about how the media is covering it in Europe, and particularly in the United Kingdom, but also just other observations. Then we'll get into a variety of other issues. So with that introduction, Tom, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Always a pleasure, Lockwood.
And very quickly, temperature, weather experience there in the UK. We here in the coastal regions of North Carolina are watching with a great deal of concern several hurricanes, particularly Hurricane Maria. But what is the weather like, and what's the weather report there in the UK?
Oh, it's starting to get chilly. My wife was talking about turning on the boiler for with the central heating again. So we're facing a cold autumn and a colder winter.
And what about the news on the weather related to the hurricanes, very quickly?
Of course, the British have several overseas territories which are being affected. Mm-hmm. They were affected by Irma, and now they're going to be affected by the follow-up Marie. Was it Maria?
Maria.
And so everyone is very, very worried about it. I mean, as you heard, Anguilla was, or Antigua and Barbuda were deemed to be
practically uninhabitable.
Uninhabitable, mm-hmm, after Irma. And now they're going to be hit again. The same with the British Virgin Islands. I think Montserrat may be hit this time. These are all British territories. And we've got people on the ground. There's a ship due to arrive any second now with 60 tons of equipment to try and help the people there. But they just seem to be coming one after the other.
You know, it is interesting, the international nature of these hurricanes. And of course, we also have the concerns associated with Puerto Rico, which is receiving the full brunt, sadly, of Hurricane Maria. And that's a territory, U.S. territory, that finds itself in a unique position of being bankrupt. So we're probably going to see, and this segues beautifully into the upcoming conversation, what role the international community might play in the recovery for these regions of the world, particularly from the United Nations. And with that as the opening comment, let's talk about the UN and how is the president's speeches and visitations being received in Europe? What has been the remarks of the European community?
Well, one consistent theme is hypocrisy.
Okay, really?
Yes. That in one breath, he talks about the need to protect sovereign rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next breath, he attacks or appears to attack other countries' sovereignty. So, you know, it's as if, you know, I'm just telling you this sort of underlying theme. It's as if he's saying, yes, we believe in sovereignty for everyone as long as it fits in with American foreign policy.
Okay, so
as long as it's a sovereignty which we approve of.
Okay, now, is this what's being printed in the papers there in the United Kingdom and of course, Europe? Is that what the news coverage?
Yes, yeah, that is, you know, I mean, that's the a summary of it. They mentioned some good things.
What are some of the good things?
They said that it's important that that Trump, and it's refreshing to see that Trump is actually seeming to want to work with the United Nations.
Really?
There's been an ongoing fear that He wouldn't want to work with the United Nations at all. That he praised the, some of the United Nations work. That he praised the Marshall Plan. That he referred to past American foreign policy as being very good in many respects. All that.
All right. I want to interrupt. I want to go back to your comment a few moments ago, the presumption of hypocrisy on the part of the president, which he's concerned with the actions of countries. And he, of course, pointed out three nations specifically, North Korea being one of them, and, of course, Iran. And I think that this is an important issue. I want to talk about both of those situations here. In the case of North Korea, the fact that the North Koreans have twice now fired missiles over Japan, a country that is, for all intents and purposes, very neutral in world politics, and particularly in the area of military as a result of World War II requirements. I'm surprised that that's perceived as being hypocritical in light of the fact that the president has also noted that North Korea is a threat to peace around the world. Is that one of those areas where it's perceived as he's being hypocritical, Tom?
Yes, but not quite in the way you said it.
Oh, really? But that's how he said it.
Nobody disputes that North Korea is a threat.
Okay.
Nobody disputes that at all. What they're saying is that North Korea has the right to choose what sort of government it wants.
Uh-huh.
And what Trump seems to be saying, and I think a better example of that would be Iran or Venezuela, but all of them apply. What Trump appears to be saying is, you know, everyone should be sovereign. We should focus on national sovereign rights.
Right.
It was national sovereign rights that we fought for in World War II.
But wait a second.
We fought as sovereign nation states.
But wait a second. You say here's what's frustrating to me in your observations.
Well, let me just finish that thought. But at the same time, he says you shouldn't have a socialist government in Venezuela.
Wait a second.
A theocracy in Iran.
But wait a second. Let's get to that in a moment. That is not what we heard here in the States, Tom. Now, you're parsing the comments very quickly. We've got to go to a break here in a moment. But in the case of North Korea, he did say, in fact, a totalitarian government that is starving its own people, which he is concerned about. He did express concerns over that. But really, the focus was on the international actions of North Korea, particularly in the area of armament, nuclear armament and the firing of the missiles. That had nothing to do. I think you're conflating, and I'm surprised that the Europeans are conflating this issue as well. And I'm going to get to something here in a moment, but I think the president also challenged the UN that much had to be done to one, worry about the countries, and we're going to get to another topic associated with this, with Rwanda. As a matter of fact, a country that many of us here in the States know little about, and Burma. But here's the issue. It is interesting that the Europeans are conflating those issues in light of, to be blunt, Neville Chamberlain. There's a concern here in the States that we're looking at totalitarian governments that are pushing for a fight, as has North Korea. Does not the European community see that?
Yes, it does. But it doesn't think that Trump's approach to solving the problem is the right one.
And what approach
They fear that he is taking first and foremost military action. They rely too much on military action and military threats. And in particular, the line which is coming out is that we will destroy North Korea if it threatens the United States or one of our allies. Now, what is the definition of threaten?
But wait a second, Tom.
If he's saying that, I mean, does that mean that if they keep firing missiles over Japan,
yes.
that they would make a preemptive strike on North Korea?
In answer to your question, that's how we in the States perceive it. And yes, correctly so. You know, it is fascinating. And I go back to Neville Chamberlain. We have seen situations historically, Tom, where, and by the way, Neville Chamberlain, your new country there, the United Kingdom, walked back from a Berlin conference in which he said, we will have peace in our time, which resulted in millions of people dying, both innocent victims, the Jews specifically, about 6 million, and then hundreds of thousands of personnel engaged in armament and war. It's fascinating, Tom, what you're telling us, that the Europeans have so ignored history. That's how we perceive it here in this country and how we feel threatened, as should the rest of the world, on the events of North Korea.
But I'll tell you, I think the Europeans would take the view that
We'll get back to
the North Koreans actually attack someone. Then yes, at that point, wipe them off the map.
At that point, it may be too late.
Preemptive move. Now, and that has been the policy of successive American governments ever since the first nuclear bomb was launched.
By the way, what has that gotten us, Tom? What has that gotten us with North Korea?
The longest period of peace, in answer to the question, the longest period of peace and prosperity probably in world history.
You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms Lockwood here in the studio this afternoon. This portion has been pre-recorded. I'm confident folks are wanting to call in. They can at least make notes on our Facebook page at Viewpoints on the Talk Station. That's Viewpoints on the Talk Station. Of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here this afternoon on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week being the 25th of September. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Brexit is back. EU foreign ministers meet on Monday to discuss negotiating tactics. And the following day, British PM Theresa May meets the EU's Donald Tusk to try and break the deadlock. The topic will also be discussed at next week's annual conferences of the ruling Conservative Party and opposition Labour Party. Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron will on Tuesday formally call for a Eurozone finance minister and a Eurozone parliament. Domestically, the French president continues to have problems with plans to reform French employment law. On Monday, the country's truck drivers were planning a national protest strike. Early Monday morning, Angela Merkel will be confirmed as German chancellor for a fourth term. Her main coalition partner is expected to be the centrist FDP. Two important pieces of German legislation are due to take effect on Sunday. Same-sex marriage has become legal. And a new social media law means that social media platforms will face fines of up to $6 million if they fail to remove hate speech or other criminal material within 24 hours. Also on Sunday, Austria bans burqas. The regulation is part of an integration law that urges refugees and asylum seekers to participate in language courses, citizenship application, and worker training. The Middle East will be focused on the Iraqi Kurds' independence referendum on Monday. The referendum is opposed by Iraq, Turkey, the US, the UK, and the UN. They're all concerned that the vote will derail the fight against ISIS. There are also fears that an independent Kurdistan will inject another destabilizing element into the Middle East. Russia's relations with the Islamic world will be addressed on Monday when Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov hosts a reception at the start of the Islamic New Year. The guests will be the ambassadors from the members of the Organization of Islamic Countries. It is a busy week for Congress as it races to meet the Saturday deadline to agree a federal budget. President Trump has threatened to close down the government if the budget is not passed. In Asia, the Thai Supreme Court is on Wednesday scheduled to deliver its verdict in the trial of ousted Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra. Yingluck faces up to 10 years in prison for wasting billions of dollars in a rice subsidy scheme. In Colombia on Sunday, a ceasefire agreement takes effect between the Colombian government and the ELN, or National Liberation Army. The ceasefire is scheduled to end in January unless it is renewed. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're chatting about this speech this afternoon with Tom. He and I do not agree, and of course, I'm a little fascinated by the European approach to this. And Tom, I want to get on to the other countries that were mentioned. We'll get to Venezuela in a moment, but the other aspect, you're seeing this underlying thread. You're telling me, what have been, have you read any of the headlines? Can you share with us any of the headlines in any of the major press there in the United Kingdom or probably in Europe? Have you got any clippings there that you could share with us, just out of curiosity?
Basically, things like, it was in The Guardian, Trump attacks everyone.
Wow.
The Independent has said that Trump not well received at UN. Le Monde says something like Trump rejected by Europeans, and so forth and so on.
Really?
All right, I think the Swedish foreign minister also, I thought she had a good quote.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Margot Wallström. She described the speech as a bombastic nationalist speech.
Wow. All right. Tom, let's just move on very quickly. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, LookAhead Radio. He's sharing with us what he's seeing in the European media and European press. Tom, let's now move to the issue of Syria. And, of course, the fact that the president was very critical of Syria and Iran, two countries which, by the way, continue to create a great deal of fear and concerns. Again, I go back to the relationship that the United States has in viewing World War II. And by the way, you mentioned earlier if Kim Jong-un does in fact attack a country with a nuclear weapon, quite frankly, it will be too damn late. But back to the issues, these countries that he has identified, they are all, and he used the word, rogue nations. Even the Europeans have used those names. I'm surprised that they don't, is there a sense that the United Nations is just a gathering place for special functions and agreeable meetings? Are they really, does the European Union or the European community not see the United Nations as an area where you really hammer out differences? They haven't been hammered out. To you, Tom.
Okay, let me just go back a little bit here. First of all, if you drop a bomb on North Korea, you're also going to destroy South Korea. Okay, that's an ally.
We all know that.
So
and that's been one of the great
millions
concerns.
Of lives being lost. Okay, that's number one. Number two, they don't disagree with a lot of the description. They don't like the languages being used, but basically they're in total agreement that these are nasty people. All right, but they are concerned that Trump turns to the military measures before the diplomatic, that he puts too much emphasis on military measures to solve problems.
Tom, let me interrupt.
Is a concern. It's not a description of liking these countries any more than any other one. It's the implementation of the policies and how they're implemented and the means that are used.
But Tom, the point of the matter, and here we in the United States have looked at years and years of diplomacy that have gotten us nothing, and in fact, quite frankly, have created even more fear and concern, namely the issue of greater expansion of nuclear weaponry. We now have Iran, North Korea, now South Korea has even expressed interest in possible nuclear armament, as has Japan. The point of the matter is, Tom, that after years and years of, quote, diplomacy, nothing has been accomplished. All right, I want to talk about one other item, and we've got to move on to a variety of other issues. Tom Arms of Look Ahead News with us, Look Ahead Radio. Venezuela. All that the president did was acknowledge the fact that socialism isn't working, and he pointed out how far Venezuela has fallen. One of the richest, most successful countries in South America, now literally bankrupt. And he was just pointing out how socialism is not working. It's just an acknowledgement. I think that the UN needs to be aware of that as well.
And the UN is aware of it. And the UN has condemned what's happening. It's condemned what's happening there in Venezuela. The European Union has condemned what's happening in Venezuela. The fear is that Trump has form. And that form is, as I said, to turn to the military to solve the problems. And turn to them much quicker than anyone else.
You know, it's interesting. We end up in a military event no matter what. And the case in point is, I think, a perfect example. Syria and Iraq and what's happening with the various tribes within Syria. The question that the president is asking, and I thought it was very important and very incisive, is the UN really interested in doing anything? We've got the issue of the Kurds. We've got to talk here very quickly about Rwanda and the situation in Burma, where we're seeing, quite frankly, ethnic cleansing. In both instances, I think the president rightfully, and I'm surprised that the European community has not seen this, is asking questions about, really, is the UN planning to do anything, or is it just a matter of sitting around and talking about them? What, again, is the reaction there in Europe on these issues? The Kurds in Rwanda. Let's talk about Rwanda.
Okay. It's the Rohingya people who occupy the state. They make up the majority of the population in the state of Rakhine in Myanmar, which used to be called Burma. What it is doing is basically all it can do, because it is not, the UN is not a sovereign nation. It can only do what its member states say it can do, what they agree on. And you really wouldn't want it any other way. You wouldn't want the UN overriding American foreign policy or French or British or dictating policy to them. All they can do is implement the policies of the member states. In the case of Myanmar, what you have is about 1.5 million people who are Muslims living in a country which is controlled by Buddhists. 89-90% of the population of Burma or Myanmar is Buddhist. They have never accepted that these people are even citizens of Myanmar. And so now that means they have no access to education facilities, health facilities, nothing. They have no passports. They can't travel. All that stuff.
So here's the question. What is the solution? Because we're seeing ethnic cleansing. You know, it's interesting. I find it fascinating that the president, this country is being perceived as being bigots, yet this country has done more to challenge other countries and the UN. I've got to bring it to a close here very quickly. We've got to move on to other items. But my question to you, Tom, what does the European Union see as the value of the United Nations, really?
Well, the United Nations is, in a sense, you're quite right. It's a talking shop, but it does have some teeth. Because when it does agree on things, it sends troops. It sends money. It sends aid. I mean, there are over 100,000 peacekeeping forces organized by the UN in different parts of the world. 100,000 troops. They distribute food. They operate UNESCO. They operate UNICEF. They operate the UN High Commission for Refugees. All these things, they're taking care of millions and millions, tens of millions of refugees around the world.
The problem
here is a lot that the UN does. Part of the UN is the IMF and the World Bank.
Tom, it all sounds well, but we here in the United States see this as a need to actually accomplish something, and nothing's been accomplished. And by the way, just a note, up until the late Jesse Helms, the United States was the largest financial contributor to the United Nations, still is to a large degree. And we here in the United States have gotten to the point where we actually do not respect that institution at all. And by the way,
let me ask you this question.
Very quickly.
Let me ask you this question. Who do you think should pay more taxes? The person earning $10,000 a year or the person earning $1 million a year?
This is not
is how the UN is works as well.
Well, we don't see that as a taxation. We see it as an organization that is a mutual agreement and supported equally by all members and based on, if you will.
The contributions are based on their income.
Well, I think that's
the only way you can base it.
We don't.
You can't expect a country like Congo to pay as much
to
supporting the UN.
We said fair share. It begs the we don't have.
And your share is almost exactly the share of your share of the world GDP. Work it out.
As a matter of fact, quite frankly, a lot of countries, Tom, we won't get into the debate on the UN, have never even financially supported it. They have a debt to the UN. No financial support given so far. All right, we'll get onto other issues. I have appreciated the very intense conversation we've had with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. We're going to get onto some other items very quickly right after this commercial break here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Just want to remind folks, you're welcome to make comment, please, since this program has been pre-recorded. We've got to do that to accommodate Tom's need for some rest from time to time. It's nearly midnight as we are airing this show in London, where Tom finds himself. But we're talking with him, of course, about issues around the world. If you'd like to make comment, please go to our Facebook page, Viewpoints on the Talk Station, Viewpoints on the Talk Station, or you can email us at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. That's viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, let's move on to other items that are percolating, if you will, in the area of Europe. First, let's start with your home territory, the future of the European Union after 9 months. And I say the future of the European Union because, of course, the question was, what is the future of the European Union without the United Kingdom now that the United Kingdom has initiated Brexit, its exit from the EU? Tom?
Well, actually, the Europeans are feeling very positive. Claude Juncker gave a speech the other day saying, we're really looking forward to the future. You've got the British have withdrawn. The British have always been a brake on European integration. And so those who are left behind are saying, wow, we've been freed. We can have lots of integration now, political integration, more economic integration. They're talking about a minister of finance for the EU to coordinate all their financial policies. You've had two big elections already, and you're about to have a third, the Netherlands, France, and Germany. Now, in each of those cases, there was a threat from the anti-EU lobby. And in each case, the anti-EU lobby has been sent off with their tail between their legs. Everyone has voted pro-EU. The downturn in the economy, which you had a couple years ago, it's now starting to reverse. I think you're talking about 2.5, maybe even 3% growth across the Eurozone next year. That's pretty good. In some countries, you're getting 5-6% growth. So a lot of people are very positive. Now, in my opinion... this could easily swing the other way. And the reason is because once they start integrating, there will be a backlash against the integration. And so, at the moment, yes, for the next 4 or 5 years, I think things are going to be looking pretty good for those who are in favor of political union. But after that, I think you could have a backlash against it.
All right, talking about political union, in one organization, one country that has played a key role in the European Union has been Germany. And Germany is facing some elections here very shortly. What can we learn from this? How is Chancellor Angela Merkel doing in her campaign to secede herself?
Well, she at last stage was 17 points ahead in the opinion polls, and the election is on Sunday. So I would say she has a pretty good chance of being chancellor for a fourth term. Why? Because she's seen as a stable pair of hands. Mm-hmm. She's not very passionate. She doesn't shout a lot. In fact, the nickname for her is Mother.
Oh.
Or in German, they call Mutti. And that's what they want. That's what the Germans want. They want a safe pair of hands.
Okay. And
they,
but the, she's,
they don't want another passionate person.
Okay. Very interesting, because she has faced the issue on immigration and the refugees. Is that still a concern in Germany?
Yes, it's still a concern. But basically, most people have backed her. The Alternative for Deutschland, which was anti-EU and anti-refugee, anti-Islamic, is expected to get about 9% of the poll,
which will
give them about 60 seats in parliament at national level. And this is the first time they will have representatives at the national level.
Okay.
Now, that's 9%. That means there are 91% who would not be voting for them. Although it's increased, and they have switched from being anti-EU to focusing entirely on being anti-Islamic.
Okay. Well, anti-Islamic, not just anti-immigration.
Well, the two go hand in hand.
They're
campaigning against the building of mosques and things like that.
Okay. All right. Well, since we're talking about that, let's talk about Iran and its expanding interest in the Middle East. What's happening with Iran? And we talked about that earlier related to the UN, a country that the president identified as, quote, a rogue nation, which is, again, very totalitarian. But his concern predominantly that being military. What is the future of Iran? It's also become very belligerent, not only to, ostensibly to the U.S., but to the world at large as well. What about Iran? How is that being perceived there, and what's the concern?
Well, the concern is that the Syrian conflict has really worked to Iran's benefit, and so is the conflict in Yemen. They're doing reasonably well in backing the Shiite factions in Yemen. The Qatar thing is working to the advantage. In Syria, they have effectively established a land corridor all the way from Tehran to Beirut.
So,
which means that they can move supplies and men all along that corridor,
okay,
which was previously blocked.
All right, let me, because we've got to go to another break very quickly here. Tom, associated with this is the actions of Russia and Turkey. What does this do for that very interesting coalition?
Well, you know, in both cases, it's increased their presence in the Middle East. Very interesting. Last week or so in Turkey, they came up with a new educational policy in which they have said basically that from now on, the schools will be teaching creationism, which is what's taught in all the Muslim countries. They will be teaching the creationism rather than Darwinism.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be the accepted thing in Turkey. Another thing is that they would be preaching jihadism, i.e. the spread of Muslim or Islam. And so they 6 and 10 year olds will be learning the world in those terms rather than in the strictly secular terms that have been existent in Turkey since the 1920s.
You know,
almost 100 years.
This is interesting because Turkey, of course, has been, if you will, that buffer between the Middle East and Russia, Europe, and as on one side, and Europe and the Western civilizations on the other side. Does this not concern Europe?
Yes, it does. It concerns Europe an awful lot. Turkey has always been schizoid.
Right. Right.
You have to go right back. You know, it was the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the western half of Turkey was the Roman Empire up until 1452. The eastern half was one of the first parts of the Middle East to fall to Islam. And it's sort of like split down the middle. Eastern Turkey is very Islamic. Western Turkey, where you have Istanbul, is very cosmopolitan, very European.
It's going to be an interesting combination. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Be scared. Be very scared. In fact, if you heard President Trump's UN address, then you are probably terrified. Trump used the occasion to draw red lines across the map and dare his opponents to cross them. North Korea, Iran, and Venezuela, they're the new axis of evil. In one breath, he called for an international order based on a respect for national sovereignty. In the next, he attacked the national sovereignty of those with whom he disagreed. The United Nations and international cooperation enjoyed early support, but then the president contradicted himself by threatening to go it alone with an American-centered unilateralism. And finally, Trump dropped the bombshell. The bombshell that he was effectively jettisoning America's long-held policy of no use of nuclear weapons unless the United States was attacked first. Pakistan, Russia, Britain, the United States, and France have historically said that they will use nuclear weapons only in the case of invasion or attack against their territory or against one of their allies. China and India have gone one step further and pledged no first use of nuclear weapons. Why? Nuclear weapons have always been considered a defensive weapon only, a deterrent. Other countries do not attack members of the nuclear weapons club for fear that they will themselves be attacked with weapons capable of killing millions and potentially igniting an Armageddon. Until Trump's speech, no one has ever said that they will use their weapons if another country threatened them. As for Iran, well, it is now a foregone conclusion that Trump will scrap the Iran nuclear deal when it comes up for renewal on October the 15th. For its part, Iran has served notice that if the U.S. pulls out, it will resume its nuclear weapons program. What effect would an American pullout have on relations elsewhere around the world? Well, for a start, North Korea, China, and Russia could argue that there is no point in Pyongyang negotiating any denuclearization deal because Trump will not honor it. Next, China, France, Germany, Britain, and Russia, all co-signatories of the deal, will be furious that Trump has ignored them. One of the pillars of Trump's foreign policy has been an international order based on national sovereignty. He is opposed to states forming political or trading blocs in order to compete more effectively. It makes sense if your policy is America first. The U.S. is the world's most powerful country in both economic and military terms, but others are growing fast. To remain top dog, America firsters need to keep the rest of the world divided and towing the American line. So, in one breath, Trump pays obeisance to the principle of national sovereignty. But in the next, he attacks Venezuela's failed socialism and adds President Nicolas Maduro to his rogues gallery. Venezuela is in no position to threaten the U.S. It is a failed state. Its failure is a domestic rather than a foreign policy issue. It is hypocrisy to call for an international order based on national sovereignty and then threaten to meddle in another country's domestic affairs. Most Americans have long held doubts about the UN. They reckon that they get only grief for the $8 billion a year that the international body costs them. They fail to take into account that their UN contribution compares to $11.7 billion for the Department of the Interior, $40.6 billion for the Department of Homeland Security, $47.4 billion for the State Department, and last, but definitely not least, a whopping $824.6 billion defense budget. The UN supports 100,000-plus peacekeepers in 16 different hotspots, helps tens of millions of refugees, promotes health education programs, distributes food relief, promotes cultural links and children programs. I could go on and on. The real complaint is not that the UN fails to represent value for money. It is that the UN does not do what America wants. Donald Trump's nominal support for the UN was him serving notice that he will support the United Nations as long as the United Nations serves American interests. He does not want a UN based on collectively agreed policies determined by national sovereign states. President Trump wants UN policies based on the interests of one sovereign state, America.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're chatting with him. It's nearly midnight where he is, so this program has been pre-recorded. As I mentioned a few moments ago, earlier in the program, as a matter of fact, feel free to make comments and observations at Viewpoints on The Talk Station. That's our Facebook page, Viewpoints on The Talk Station. Or contact us at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. Email us at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. Tom, I want to move on to three very quick items. First, more serious item, Kurds, their independence. I mentioned that earlier. What is the future of that in light of what you just shared with us a few moments ago about Syria and Iran? The Kurds, do they have much of a chance of establishing their own country or their own territory?
Well, almost everyone is opposed to it, except the United States and maybe Britain and a couple of other countries. Certainly all the other countries in the region are opposed to it.
Why?
Turkey. Well, because there are Kurdish groups in Iran, Syria, Iraq, and Turkey. And if you're going to set up a Kurdish state, that means you have to take land away from all of those countries. And they don't want that. I mean, you understand that. If you just take land away from one of them, let's say it's Iraq, then the ones in Iraq will not be satisfied with that.
Okay,
and the ones in Turkey will eventually want to join up.
Okay, so basically you're saying that that does not look very positive for them at this point.
I'm saying that if you formed a Kurdish state, you would probably create another point of dissension in the Middle East, right in the middle of it.
But let's talk about this very quickly and remind everyone, the Kurds were part of ethnic cleansing on the part of Turkey and Iran. So
and Iraq.
And Iraq. Okay, so I go back to the UN. Is there a solution? And I'm asking a quick question, just for a quick answer. Is there a solution?
Well, the Kurds are a difficult problem. They were a state. Okay. They ceased to become a state. And from about 19, they got sort of squeezed out by the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which divided up the Middle East between Britain and France.
Right.
Is there a solution? I'm sure there is, but you've got to talk to each other. It has to be worked out over a period of years.
But
we can't make, you know, I like to use the expression McDonaldize the world.
Okay.
That is fast food. You just serve it up straight away.
Right.
That's not a solution.
Well, it is unfortunate because we're paying close attention, of course, to the lives that are lost as a result of these conflicts. And I think that's a big issue and one that even in the States, we have a hard time comprehending. I want to move on to one final issue and I want to lighten the conversation. Swiss toilets being blocked with cash.
$100,000.
Okay.
Someone literally flushed $100,000 in 50 euro notes down the toilets of a restaurant and the United Bank of Switzerland, the UBS Bank in Geneva.
And my question is,
we don't know why. We don't know why. And the police are investigating because they're concerned that it might be dirty money.
We will end it with that, with our guest, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, pun intended, I might add, Viewpoints Radio. And again, just to remind you, in response to the conversation that Tom and I have had today, feel free to make your comments at our Facebook page, Viewpoints on The Talk Station. That's Viewpoints on The Talk Station. Or go to our email address at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. That's Viewpoints with an S, viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. Tom, as always, a very engaged conversation. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
I enjoyed it, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.